I was on a call yesterday with a lot of the local community health centers. And I'm just so, the community health centers and the free clinics in the Richmond area, and I'm just so impressed by all of their hard work and diligence and creativity to deal with what's happening right now in terms of continuing to help and serve their patients, helping their employees with employee needs and childcare and sick time and all that stuff. And there are so many challenges out there right now for medical providers. So I know that all of you who are working in the clinic settings have just a boatload of concerns and demands on you right now. So thank you for everything that you're doing. In terms of Enroll Virginia and our work to help consumers access the health insurance and the health services that they need, it's also a time for us to be, you know, available and creative in how we can continue to do our work. So we do want to spend some time today hearing from you about what you're thinking about in your communities. I mean, a lot of us are now working remotely, so we're not, you know, where we usually are to work with consumers. But we can still do a lot of work by telephone or sort of discreet meetings, one-on-one with consumers who need help, those kind of things. So we're hoping that you're, you know, working on ways to continue to get the job done and be creative in working in your own community. So why don't we, you know, hear from some of you, and I'm going to just call on Carla. If Carla's on, can Carla unmute herself? Because I know Carla's been thinking real hard about how to continue doing work in Richmond. So are you there, Carla? Deepak, do we know if Carla's on?
She is. Let me see if I can unmute her. So just warning, Carla, I'm going to unmute you in a minute here.
Do you hear me?
Yeah. Carla, okay. I can hear you. Yep.
Well, yeah, it has been definitely challenging for us because we entering a really cool project with the libraries. We had like, I don't know, maybe 10 events set up on schedule to reach out to the libraries, and then they're closed. We're getting less phone calls, but we're sending information to the partners just to let them know that we're still here, that we can enroll everyone over the phone. And actually, you know, the phone calls are less, but I still get, yesterday I got a couple phone calls from someone who needed to sign up for Medicaid, another one who was within SEP, and we could do it over the phone. So, you know, it's just like adjusting ourselves to a new thing. And I think that I send a notification to all of our partners in the Medicaid group, letting them know that, yeah, we're slowing down, but if you hear about health, somebody needing health insurance, we, with the marketplace or Medicaid, please give us a call because we're available over the phone. We're checking our lines daily. And also, I sent a notification to all the DEC manager and the rapid response manager, Mark, that you all, many of you know, letting them know that everyone who is laid off, all the workers, you know, that we're available. We can sign them up over the phone, and I send that flyer that Sarah just updated with the new percentages and all that. Just letting them know that please post this in all the VEC and workforce offices because we're here to help them. That's one thing that, that we're doing. And also another thought would be just going back to our consents and get the people who have signed up for Medicaid and just follow up with all of them and asking them, did you receive your card finally? Because, I mean, it is important that they have healthcare, but can they actually access to it? We get from many of our clients that they don't use it because they don't know what providers they can go or where they can go. And now we're developing like a screen tool to ask them, okay, first of all, did you receive your card? Second, do you know where you can go to access healthcare? What hospitals and what providers? And then the last thing, what would you do if you have symptoms? They're saying that if it's just a mild flu, stay home, that you can control with over-the-counter medicines because they're clogging, like the emergency rooms are clogged, are really saturated with people who actually they don't really need it. And that's becoming a really, really a bad problem for the clinics mm-hmm. and the hospital. So we just, you know, just touch up with our clients that we already sign up. And that will give us something to do too. It's a different outreach, but that's just an idea. If someone else have ideas on how to continue, you know, being useful. But I think education is a big part of our role. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, that's so great, Carla. I mean, I agree with you that the, you know, health literacy is super important right now too, so people know how to use the health insurance that they have. Thank you so much. I do want to stress with people the idea of getting out to your local, communicating with your local employment commission is really important because a lot of these part-time workers who are losing jobs right now will be going to VEC offices to try to get unemployment benefits. And some of them will qualify and some of them will not. But even for the ones who do qualify, the amount of those benefits is substantially less than what they were earning. So they may suddenly find themselves eligible for Medicaid as a result of the loss of employment. And if someone does lose employment, that kind of change in circumstance, if you document, you verify that with DSS that your previous income has ended and you have zero income or lower income, then obviously that should be enough to get the Medicaid approved. And we have asked DSS and DMAS to consider a whole range of policy enhancements that would, you know, liberalize or loosen the verification requirements right now, delay renewal requirements, not terminate anybody at the moment during the crisis, et cetera. So we are talking with the agencies about what they can do policy-wise to keep people, to get people into programs and keep them in the program while we all get through this crisis. Who else has some ideas about what we could be doing to help people at this time, or what your own programs are doing?
Jill, this is Sarah calling from Eastern Shore Health. The unemployment offices are currently closed, and the Social Security offices are currently closed, correct? Or is there something, are they open over there? But from what I have been told is that all the offices are closed and everything has to be done over the phone.
Well, I think that is true, but they're still operating. They're not, I think they're just closed to the public. But I think work is still being done. What else do people know about that?
I've gotten a lot of calls. I'm getting a lot of calls, like the hotel workers, where the income has dropping, you know, and then they're like, what do I do? And of course, I get social determinants of health too. And I'm like, you got to call your workers and, you know, report that you're not working so that your SNAP benefits get increased. The food bank, you know, now is the time that you can utilize that. I called up there yesterday just to check on that. I've called the schools to verify, you know, which ones that are open and they can go get that kind of stuff. So that's what we've been working on here. And then utilizing using healthcare.gov with doing the apps on there and just going ahead and getting those applications done. And just doing those calls, because it's very inconvenient, you know, doing things that you don't want to do because you're used to having the patient in your office. But where I work in the clinic, we are not bringing anyone in that doesn't need to be in the office. And it's just kind of like, I don't want to do it, but at the same time, you can do it, you know, it still can be done. And so I'm trying to go outside of the box and use the other ways to still get the applications done.
Right. And healthcare.gov is definitely an efficient way to get a very fast decision.
Five minutes this morning it took me. I mean, the application took 20 minutes and then the approval was 15 minutes later. It was already showing active.
Yeah. Actually active for Medicaid?
Actually active for Medicaid. That was a zero income one. And I told her, I was like, I'll check it in a few days and I'll call you back. And then, of course, with it being extra slow here, I was like, there's no way. But I figured I'd check her anyways, and it was active. And I called her back, and I was like, it's already active. It literally was maybe 15 minutes after I had completed
the application.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder how that happened.
I don't know. I've had another one happen like that, but I checked it the next day. So I'm wondering, so now I'm just going to start checking them. But it had gave me, you know, you get the two notifications on there, and it had gave me the one where she's going to get the information. It wasn't the one where if she needs the information, it was the actual, like, the approval one. So
it was a determination, and somehow it immediately got into
the
Virginia system and clicked in to actually provide benefits. that's really wonderful.
Yes. Yep. She can go right to the pharmacy. And the thing with that, though, and I don't know if you guys are aware of this, so I check them, and I've found that the dental benefits and the pharmacy benefits, even though it'll show active for the medical, it takes about a day or two before the other benefits will show. The dental, I think, is 2, and the pharmacy, it will not show active until the next day. She didn't need any prescriptions, but I just learned that, and I just wanted to share that with the group.
I think we should send all our applications to you. You must have a magic house.
I wish. Some days it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But Joe, that reminds me. I missed it, like, the very first minute of the call. I understand what Deepak was saying about SEPs and what you said about the health centers. So they are all close to application assistance, or I'm sorry, can we clarify the status? Because I've been thinking about referring people, and I would like to know.
What, for the health centers?
Yeah.
Well, let's see, is Nicole or Lisa on to speak sort of statewide about what the health centers are doing, for starters? And you need to unmute yourself either on the computer or on your phone.
I don't see, unless they're called in on any of the numbers, I don't see them.
Okay. Okay, so, well, if we don't have a statewide report on this.
I can definitely check in locally.
Check in locally, but it does sound like most of the clinics, and this is consistent with what I heard on a call yesterday, they are really trying to limit patients only to people who are affected by the virus and need to be seen or tested, and I know that there are not enough tests and there's not enough protective gear and all that stuff. So they're really struggling. So they are really limiting you can't just walk in. But everyone should check with their local health providers. Who else on the call would have some information about that? some of the other of you who are working in health clinics. Okay, we don't hear anybody. You need to unmute yourself.
Oh, I see. It looks like Lisa is on the call. Let me unmute her line. She's saying that. she just emailed me.
Thank you. I've been waving like crazy over here.
Hey, Lisa.
New technology.
So, yes. Nicole is out today, so I'm covering the call for her. So health centers are asking people to call them because the health centers are responding to their with their services and their community needs individually. So it's kind of hard to get a bead on how everybody's handling stuff at the individual health centers because it's all unique. So the association has been asked to put some information, general information together for patients, like a fact sheet and also can be shared with the media. And one of the reasons I wanted to be sure to be on this call is so I could sort of get a handle on how health centers, we just need to tell people to call the health center like we've been doing for regular medical appointments.
Yeah, so can anyone else on the call who can just describe what your own center is doing in terms of people who need, you know, because of the loss of health insurance, of course, they get an SEP into the marketplace. Deepak was talking earlier about the idea that we're hoping that at the federal level, they'll open up the federal marketplace to the 33, I guess it's about 33 states that use the federal marketplace, healthcare.gov, for coverage, open up a new SEP for people who are losing their health insurance or just uninsured people who finally realize they need to have health insurance to go on and get a SEP to get health insurance. What are some of the other centers doing right now in terms of people who need application assistance?
I just unmuted Eduardo, I think he's on the call.
Thank you. Yeah, I was also trying to I screamed saying, can you hear me? No one could hear me.
We can hear you.
All right, perfect. So what we do in here when it comes to enrollment is that everything has been moved to telephonic applications. I spoke with Denise, Virginia Healthcare Foundation, who also indicated that that's doable. So what we're going to be doing is a three-way call. We call our client or patient who already has an appointment with one of our enrollers, and then we call Cover VA, and we will complete the application. For our existing eligibility, only for those uninsured or uninsurables, we will extend their eligibility. If it has expired as of January 1st, we're going to automatically extend it for 6 months. So they don't have to come in and renew. They're automatically eligible with their slide.
That's eligible
that's for the sliding fee
services. Okay.
For enrollment, yes.
Okay.
For new patients who need to enroll, we're also going to do telephonically, explain how it works, get all the information over the phone, and then fax us or text their documentation so we can complete this slide.
So Eduardo, it sounds like the best advice is still just to call the individual health center to get instructions.
And that's correct.
And that's what we're putting on the information that we're creating so that if people need to make medical appointments, ask questions about the sliding scale, ask about medication assistance programs, ask about special enrollment periods for enrollment, ask about Medicaid programs, everything. We're just directing them to our locations map of all the health center locations, and then the instruction is to call that health center. So,
yes, and does that sound like that work? Internally, we're going to have screeners outside of the building or right at the main entrance, screening every single person. Once we determine that the person is low risk or no risk at all and has an appointment, we will sanitize them at that moment and send them to the front desk to be checked in for the medical appointment. If a high risk or possible high risk individual is found, we're going to ask them to wait in their car if they're driving, hopefully. We give them a mask, and then the triage nurse will come out to speak with them. If this is a high risk client patient, then we will take them directly into our designated room to treat them.
Okay. Yeah, on our materials, we've just been saying that, you know, don't just show up at the health center. You need to call the health center first.
Exactly.
So because you guys are might be out on the sidewalk, but like another health center has a completely different location that they're doing intake in, that's outside of the regular health center. So for each of you guys, there's a different process.
Yeah.
Happening. Yeah. So we're just going to continue to encourage people to call you instead of just showing up.
Anybody else from a clinic want to chime in?
And feel free to chat with me directly through your phone or through the web if you're having trouble unmuting yourself. But *6 if you're on the phone, and you should. There should be a button somewhere on the phone, or also unmute yourself.
And I guess Eduardo, I'm given what we heard from the Eastern Shore, I'm wondering if instead of going to Cover Virginia, where you're probably going to wait 45 days for an answer, if maybe it's appropriate to consider healthcare.gov to get an immediate determination of eligibility.
That sounds very good. Actually, that's a good idea. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anyone from Project Connect. Anyone else from Project Connect is on the line to talk about that strategy as an option to get people enrolled faster?
Thank you.
I know that with some of my staff, I've been getting a lot of immediate approvals through Common Help.
Oh, online. Okay. All right. That's good too. That's good to know. Okay. Was that Justin?
Yeah. I just wanted to speak to the, hopefully my audio is coming through clear.
But yeah, we can hear you, Justin. Go ahead.
In my experience, if it's a pretty straightforward application, nothing too crazy, the marketplace you're going to get, they won't get something for like a week or so. But by the end of the day, usually you're going to get the Medicaid ID number if you can verify insurance. That's with either the determination or I've seen it even with the ones that ask that the state may contact you for more information. I've had them go through just as quick.
And did you mean to say if you can verify your income, that would be a speedy way to, you said?
So there's two determinations you can get through the marketplace for Medicaid. So you get the one that says you'll have access to your benefits, and then you can also get one that says the Department of Social Services may be reaching out to you.
Right.
In my experience, both of those go through the same amount of time. So usually by the end of the day, if you have insurance, you can usually see that person.
You'll have an answer. Yeah. Okay.
Now, they may not get their card or the letter from DSS for another week or two, but you can at least help them with that.
And it sounds like the providers are able to access the system to confirm that someone is in fact eligible before the consumer gets the card. The provider would be able to access the enrollment. Is that correct?
Yes, if you have the capability to verify insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, some of you do, which is great. And
most likely if you're working at a health center or a clinic or a hospital.
Right, yeah. Right.
I can just log on in with their date of birth and their name. I just put it in, unless they've had Medicaid before. If they've had Medicaid before, yeah. I can use their Medicaid ID to pull it, and if not, their name and date of birth. The one yesterday that I did is not showing active yet, but in February, she just retired. So in February, she had a different income versus March, where now it's just Social Security. So it makes sense where that one didn't just automatically get approved. Where, January, she retired. So her income has changed a lot. So I figured that one would take a little bit longer.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I called 2 or 3 weeks ago. I helped someone, a legal permanent resident. We called, we did the application over the phone. I mean, it went through very quickly within a week.
Great. Okay. Anybody else have experiences to share or strategies to share?
This is Lisa again. I just have another question. Is that okay?
Sure.
So, like I said, on the information we're putting together, does it also make sense to let people know that if they're losing their job and they've been offered COBRA, they may want to compare marketplace plans or other plans or other programs before they accept COBRA? Because if yes. I remember, and I don't do this every day, so I'm sorry, but if I remember correctly, if they accept COBRA, they don't get their SEP, right?
Yeah, well, if they take their COBRA, correct, they will not get the,
Yeah, so this is Deepak.
Go ahead, Deepak.
Yeah, they do get, so they'll always get the SEP for loss of coverage, right? The loss of employer-based coverage. They'll get that, and they'll get that for the length of period for that SEP. What they won't get, though, is if they sign up for COBRA and then stay on that COBRA past the end of the SEP that they did receive for the loss of employer-based coverage, then they can't then drop COBRA to get an SEP at that time for loss of coverage. Does that make sense? So what sometimes COBRA can be a helpful option is during that wait. So if someone signs up for health coverage, say today, and that coverage is not effective until April 1st or even May 1st, depending on that, and it still could be helpful to use COBRA for those 1 week, 2 week period and then drop it before the marketplace coverage starts. You can't have both, obviously, marketplace coverage and COBRA at the same time, but it can be helpful if they don't want to have a gap in coverage between their loss of employer-based coverage and the start of marketplace coverage. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, it does. I just need to try to figure out how to simplify the language a little bit. So refresh my memory. How long is the SEP? Like, you lose your job today. How long do you have to work on the, how long is your SEP?
60 days.
Okay.
You need to verify that their coverage is ending that same day as well. Some employers will extend it till the end of the month.
Yeah.
And then.
So it's 60 days from the time the coverage ends. Right.
Thank you, guys. I'm looking right now to see, because there is a COBRA section on healthcare.gov. It says unemployed/COBRA coverage. There's some helpful stuff here, but I think maybe it's just a general just reminder that that to evaluate all of your options, because potentially they could be eligible for Medicaid in that point too. And that's not,
right.
I may not even know where to access that.
And Medicaid would kick right in without any gap at all. If they, apply within 3 months of the loss of coverage, they could get the retroactive if they're eligible for those preceding 3 months. So, And Lisa, if you want to share, we're happy to look at whatever you put together, because we might want to use something like that too, and we could collaborate on the actual language. Make sure we all got it right.
This is really directed at community health centers.
Yeah.
Like what they offer, but I might, for something like the COBRA issue and SCPs and stuff, I might get you to take a look at that, or I might just keep it, because we're trying to keep it really simple. You know, a lot of, you know how complex this is, and you just mentioned something about health insurance literacy, but this is all really helpful. You know, it reminds me of what the policies actually are, like I said, since I'm not doing this every day.
Right.
So I really appreciate the help.
Yeah, and it would, like we started today, if the feds do change their mind about just an overall SCP, that would also be a major change. Okay, who else has something to contribute or questions to ask or examples to give about what they're doing?
This is Eduardo. I don't know if you guys already spoke or talked about this.
I can't hear him.
Can you talk a little louder, Eduardo?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. There has been already information regarding that DMAS will extend or will not cancel coverage due to renewals, failure to renew?
I have not seen any announcement. What I mentioned earlier was that we have proposed to DMAS that's what they do, that they do that in order to keep people in place and covered during the crisis, but
They already did.
Oh, they already did?
Yes, I actually spoke with Patricia Rivers. She's deputy chief in Arlington, and she indicated that they have been informed that will happen. I also received notification from Denise of the Virginia Healthcare Foundation in regards to the same.
Oh, great. Okay. Topic. Well, that's great. We'll look for some. I'll also try to get formal confirmation of that and get it out. So, are they saying they're postponing renewals, or are they postponing terminations, or both?
At this time, both.
Okay, excellent. All right, that's
the broadcast, if I may.
Yes.
The broadcast is to alert you that due to the current health emergency, DMAS is removing most automatic closures in MMIS. System changes deployed tonight will remove the upper age limits for 8 categories with age limits turning 19, 21, 26, and 65. We're also removing the requirement that cases with Medicare in 8 categories for which Medicare is not allowed to be closed, and pregnant women will not close after the postpartum period.
Good, great. Can you forward to us by email?
I'm sending that to you right now, Jill.
Thank you. Excellent. All right. So that, you know, and I think what that tells us is that, you know, we're working in a state, thankfully, that is responsive and concerned about all this, and willing to take some of those extraordinary steps to help help the populations that we work with. So if you think of other things that the state could do, let's stay in touch and see if we could, you know, even get some more assistance to people during this hard time.
I'm sorry, Eduardo, when was that effective? You know me, I don't hear very well.
I think
it says effective immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Okay, we'll get that out to people. Great. Who else has something to share?
Jill, this is Susan. I wanted to circle back to what Carla was saying about, you know, post-enrollment, reviewing the MCOs and everything. It just reminded me that I spoke to a consumer this morning who is kind of been in limbo on his renewal for his family, and his wife and child went to the emergency room and of course did not show as being covered because apparently the renewal had not been effectuated. But it reminded me that even with the MCOs, whatever MCOs folks are enrolled with to verify urgent care access, right? I mean, I can't say I've looked at that in particular, but I do know that a lot of urgent care centers do not accept Medicaid. And in this current environment, discouraging emergency room attendance is important once again.
Yeah. So you're saying that since not, and I don't know how all the MCOs treat urgent care centers, but you're saying that all the Medicaid MCOs should include in their provider network urgent care centers.
And does anybody know if they do?
I bet it's not consistent. But I don't know. Okay, that's worth checking on. Thank you. That's a good idea. Okay, and certainly, you know, along with the advice to people that they should call ahead, I mean, that applies to both urgent care and clinics and doctor's offices. They don't want people just showing up. People need to call ahead of time to, and that could be part of the question is, you know, do you take Medicaid? But I'll ask the state that question today.
Yeah, it's unfortunate too, because this family is in Kaiser, and he said Kaiser doesn't have urgent care. He said, yes, they do. And I'm like, you know, I've been working with this family a long, long time, but I think over time, these questions fade, you know, they're not at the forefront, you know?
Well, also remembered for Medicaid, if they miss their renewal and were already terminated because of that failure, they have a 90-day grace period to get the documents in and to restore coverage.
Oh yeah, we've been working on this for a while, so I'm not sure what happened. I thought it was all resolved.
Yeah,
back,
okay.
Back to the drawing board.
Yeah, okay. Okay, anyone else have a comment, question, something to share?
This is Deepak. I had a question about DSSs themselves. Like, how are people, like, how have things changed with policies with, you know, we've always had trouble getting callbacks from caseworkers. And in this environment where calling is preferred from them, like, what are people experiencing? Have there been some practices that have been good? And that's something that maybe we can highlight with the state to...
Deepak.
Yeah, go ahead. Who's that?
Yeah, this is Dan. So I went to a safety net meeting yesterday, and essentially the policy in the state is that they're not processing anything in person. People can bring things into the DSS and drop them off. The only thing they're doing in person are foster children and CPS issues. So they've done nothing to mitigate the issues with returning calls and taking calls.
Are they operating like half of the day? I read somewhere that they're just closed half a day. Is that true?
So what they're doing is they're doing two shifts. One shift works in the building and the other one works at home. So they're not doing half days. They're alternating days in the office.
Mm-hmm. Dan, that's what here on the Eastern Shore, I have a friend and that's what she was doing. She didn't tell me exactly. I think that they're not wanting to tell everyone that, but yeah, she was working at home. So I was kind of shocked by that. I guess they're having some people in there that are answering the calls and getting the facts, and then people that are home that are actually like processing the documents.
Okay.
Right. So if we do the math, that means half the calls will be answered that have been answered in the past.
Yep.
So different, let me think of anything else that came out of the safety net. Oh, Sentara, their process, they think statewide, is going to be set up tents outside of the hospital to do the screening. They do not have the test yet. There is concern that even when they do the swabs, that there'll be such a backup at the state that it will take longer than death to get the results. And they're asking for a waiver to be able to produce the results locally. Dr. Cornegie could not be on the call yesterday from the health department. We do know that they're trying to get tests. As you all have discussed, there's inconsistency across the clinics. I can tell you that at Valley CSB, anybody who's ill, they're basically turning away and telling to go to the emergency room. And I'm not sure that that's a good policy. So some guidance from the state would be helpful to make it more consistent, and so people will understand what they can and can't do, or should and shouldn't do. But I also received from VEC a set of documents for applying for unemployment, and I'll distribute that on the listserv just in case anybody doesn't have that. It seems that VEC is also closed. So it's going to be tough getting services for these now 14 remaining days, but it should maybe open up after that. The problem is that the curve of infections that are being detected is a steep upward slope, and I am concerned that it's going to take a lot longer. Tax-wise, make it clear to everybody that they don't have an extension to file the return. They only have an extension to pay the debt.
Right. That's right. Okay, Dan, thank you. Yeah, do send out the VEC material that you got.
You will.
Appreciate it. And yeah, when people do obtain something from the state, even if you think the rest of us got it, maybe we haven't. So please share it through the listserv. That would be really helpful, and we'll keep everybody in the loop as all of this unfolds.
So I guess one other note is that rapid response is going to virtual. Okay. And so we need to keep in touch with them. I've reached out to Sarah. I'm going to do something for a rapid response in Bristol this Friday and Thursday, but we probably ought to produce something that we all can hand to VEC.
Yeah, okay. All right, thank you. Anybody else have a last comment for the call today?
This has been very helpful. Thank you.
Well, I think it's helpful for all of us. Number one, it's helpful just to touch base because we care about each other and we care about the work that we're all trying to do. And you know, this is such an extraordinary situation. We need to be available to one another. Across the state. So I'm so glad we can do that. And in the meantime, stay safe personally, you and your families and your communities. And we'll let you know before next Wednesday if we're going to continue to use this system for our calls. I mean, obviously things are just getting smashed nationally. As everyone converts to working remotely. So thank you, Deepak, for coming up with a solution for us today. We appreciate it because it was important for us to touch base. All right, everybody. Thanks very much. Take care.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Right, take care. Bye-bye.